you get really good at the wrong things. So I got really good at working a lot. And so I'd get up at 4 a.m., I'd get home at 10 at night, and I'd be working the whole time. And I'd be really proud of that. You know, like I would get to my gym before any of the other gyms were open, and I could see them out my front window. I would look down on the street and say, suckers, my light's on and yours is not, right? And I thought that was winning. So you actually get good at starving yourself. You develop this like profit disorder where you're really proud that like, I haven't paid myself this first year, right? And you develop this pride in martyr. And what you actually have to do is like get yourself out of your head and put yourself on pay rest. You know, if you can't take 3 days off because your business will fall apart, then you don't have a business. Yeah. You know, you've got yourself a job.
Hey guys and gals, what's up? This is Trevor with another episode. Just kidding, it's Brady. Hey, just want to let you know real quick that we are starting to sell out tickets for Carrot Camp. Now, if you don't know what Carrot Camp is, Carrot Camp is for high-achieving real estate investors and agents who are already bringing in at least about six figures a year. They're doing a lot of deals. They've got some experience under their belt. We're going to be picking each other's brains on how you can really get some super valuable tactics and insights that you really can't get in bigger masterminds, Facebook groups, things like that. So you're going to get to hear some of the best marketing ideas that we have and that other investors and agents are doing right now. You're going to have a chance to dial in your PPC campaigns, your Facebook ads, your website, things like that with Carrot employees. But most of all, we want you to leave Carrot Camp with a shift in your perspective on your purpose in life and how you can actually infuse that into your business. We want you to leave feeling refreshed and recharged. That's what we're going to do for you at Carrot Camp. It's going to be awesome. Head over to carrotcamp.com and check out what our past Carrot Campers have had to say and how much it has impacted their business on every level. All right, head over to the website, carrotcamp.com. Enjoy this episode, y'all. We'll see ya.
Hey guys and gals, Trevor here coming at you with another episode of the Carrot Cast. I've got a special guest on with me. His business has nothing to do with real estate other than his business probably has real estate or it operates out of real estate, but it has everything to do with what you are doing as an entrepreneur. And I had a chance to meet Chris actually through my coach and coaching program. And then we started connecting and I shared with him one of my processes, which is the energy audit. It really resonated with him. But then also, we just started sharing back and forth. He wrote an amazing book that's coming out that is going to really resonate with you guys as entrepreneurs on your entrepreneur journey. And I want to bring Chris on for several reasons. I'll introduce you to him here in a second. But from one perspective, he's got an amazing perspective on the fitness and health side. So we're probably going to dig into some of that and what he sees in his business from a really unique perspective on the CrossFit side of things and training people. And then the next side of it is he coaches a lot of entrepreneurs. His market happens to be gym owners, but still they go through very similar things that we do as entrepreneurs in real estate, or even if you're a software company owner, very similar issues that we go through and phases as entrepreneurs. But also I want to unpack the book a little bit. So welcome on Chris Cooper onto the Carrot Cast, man.
Thanks, Trevor.
That was a lot of C's all in a row. Chris Cooper, Carrot Cast. Like, I got alliteration there.
Alliteration.
That's right. But Chris, before we dive in, let's give people some context for who are you? What is your business? Where do you live? And of course, we'll unpack how we met, but just what the heck you do and who do you serve?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm the founder of Two Brain Business, and we are an international mentorship practice. 90% of our clients are in the fitness industry. We have about 820 clients worldwide and a team of 28 mentors serving them. I got started and found my path to success after actually some failure. And I opened up a gym in 2005, opened a second location in 2008 that practically bankrupted me. Kind of got forced into mentorship, but really, you know, won the lottery ticket or won the lottery with my first mentor. He straightened the business out. I started recording the things that he was teaching me on a blog. And a few years later, you know, I was getting 50 to 100 people reading the blog every day, which seems tiny now. But that led to a speaking engagement. And I didn't have the resources to like prepare notes or like a binder to hand out at this speaking engagement. So I self-published a book of the top 20 blog posts and just, you know, shipped copies to this speaking event. And now that's the best-selling fitness business book of all time. There's still no chapters in it. You know, the early edition didn't have page numbers. It sold like 20,000 copies. And yeah, it was one of the first steps toward this mentorship practice that I own now.
Dude, there's a big lesson even in that part of the story right there. Cause a lot of people try to, it's the whole progress versus perfection thing. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs, especially newer ones and even really experienced ones too, we think we have to have everything perfect. We think we have to have this professional polished thing. And like you said, you didn't show up with what normal speakers would show up with. You're like, I've got all this value. Let me just package it up and get it to people. That right there is probably part of a big reason that your success, man. You kind of take the shortcut and don't feel like it's got to be perfect, at least in that respect, which is interesting.
Yeah. The point of difference, there are other fitness business books now, you know, and I've written three others since, including Founder Farmer, Tinker Thief, which we're going to talk about, but key to that book and why it's still popular is I was really blatantly honest about what was working and the mistakes that I made and what they'd cost me. And that kind of created this foundation of trust. So when the next book came out, which was a lot more prescriptive about what you should do, I had a waiting audience that really loved it. And my third book, Help First, same thing. You know, people loved the message that you didn't have to feel like a salesperson to get people to commit to fitness. And then, you know, over time we started building this mentorship practice because people were asking for help, and we've been on the phone with over 3,000 fitness entrepreneurs now. And we started to realize like not all advice is appropriate for people in all stages. And we started trying to filter the best advice to people at the right time. And that's what led to the four stages that I talk about in this new book.
Dude, so we'll unpack the four stages. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. If I'm not, we'll cut it out completely. But one of the things that really impressed me when we first met, and I think we first met up in Toronto, wasn't it?
It could have been, yeah.
Probably up in Toronto at Martel's event is that you guys are not officially, but you guys are behind the scenes, kind of like if a CrossFit gym owner gets an email about some things and how to improve their gym, it's like your guys' content, right? You guys are kind of the unofficial official people that help CrossFit gym owners be more effective. Is that right or wrong?
We have an arm's length relationship with CrossFit Inc. And the way, I'm sure your listeners aren't familiar with how CrossFit works, but what they sell is a license basically to use the CrossFit name at a gym. And that's where it ends. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of the libertarian philosophy of its founder. But what that means is it's very, very easy to open a gym. It's very, very hard to keep one going. You quickly realize like, I don't know anything about business. I just want to be a good fitness coach. And so CrossFit will never overtly say, call Chris. Mm-hmm. However, we are their only certified business coaching program. You know, I've been on their podcast many times, in the CrossFit Journal, on their YouTube channel. It's all us. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of others in the space. But thankfully, you know, we've earned the trust of many people at CrossFit HQ, and we've been fortunate enough to have them share our message.
Dude, I love that. And one thing I want people to think about too is distribution. Distribution is so important when you're growing a business, is trying to find, okay, where's our core audience hang out? And are there people that already have the majority of the mind share of those people? And how can I add value to them so it works well for everyone? And I don't know the details of how that all worked out, but basically that's just such an amazing distribution channel for you. It's like, where do all CrossFit gym owners have to go? Well, they have to go to CrossFit HQ to get a license. Therefore, it's a great model. It's a great way to get distribution. So if you guys are out there, no matter what business you're looking for, excuse me, I'm just getting over a cold, man. No matter what business you guys are in, if it's real estate, if it's whatever, is try to find out where is my market at? Is there a way that I can add value to the people that have consolidated the most amount of those people, distribution? And then how do I get into that distribution channel and add value to everyone? Because it's just an accelerant. It's a way to massively accelerate. We've done the same thing where we find people. It could be coaches or partners or other software companies or big brokerages. We go, cool, how do we add value to that one spot? And then it accelerates distribution out through their whole network. It's a big accelerant for business. Love it. So founder, farmer, tinker, thief, man. So when you sent this through to me, one thing that's really cool about it, obviously, is there's a brief mention of some of the topics that we had talked about together, energy audit, things like that. And I want to unpack that first, and we'll dive into your concepts of founder, farmer, tinker, thief, the four phases of the entrepreneur's journey. But Chris, when we were up there in Toronto and I delivered that 10-minute tactic on energy audit, you and I connected after that. And I think it was even the next JFDI that we talked at. You're like, man, I've actually started using that. That's something that I have used actively. And is that something that you guys are still finding value in? Is it something, I guess, why is it that the energy audit resonated to you in that moment of your entrepreneur journey?
Well, because progression as an entrepreneur means that you need to get low value roles off your plate. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it's easy to identify those roles because it's like, well, how much, you know, is this worth? I can pay a cleaner $15 an hour. My effective hourly rate is much higher than that. But when you reach a certain phase, and we would call that the tinker phase, at that point, your energy and your focus really is the most valuable thing that you're bringing to the business, not your labor anymore, not your skill set at making the donuts. So the energy audit actually becomes more and more important the more successful you are. Mm. The other thing that's really important is to understand like what seems like an important task that's really draining my energy. Yeah. So a lot of entrepreneurs would say, I need to be in touch with my clients all the time. I need to maintain this personal relationship with them. But in my case, you know, if somebody is complaining a lot or they're not like an ideal client or they're saying something on Facebook, I get really distracted by that.
Oh, yeah.
Great example. You know, when you reach this level, sometimes you just get haters because they think like the best way for me to build an audience is to throw spears at Chris.
Yep.
So I'm just going to take shots at whatever he's saying. And that is a massive distraction for me. So when I did my energy audit about 5 weeks ago, I said, I need to get off Instagram. I need to get off, you know, like our social channels. And luckily, CrossFit HQ has recently laid off a bunch of amazing people who have built this worldwide brand. And I picked up one of them and said, do this for me. And they're way better at it than I am. So
and removed a low energy thing for you, but it still had value. And that's, dude, that's one of the things that I think a lot of entrepreneurs get stuck in. And I do too, sometimes still, but where the energy out is my tool is some amazing advice, but also some of the worst advice that I have gotten as I was going through the four phases of an entrepreneur that we'll unpack here in a bit was you should really focus your time in on the things that you're really good at that people pay you well for. And what happened was I was getting paid well for this stuff. People would tell me I'm really good at it. There was literally a guy I respect a lot, man, a business coach. And he said, your unique genius is that stuff that people pay you a lot for. And they tell you you're really good at it. And people that take that advice, they're going to be possibly doing a lot of low energy stuff. And that was me before I made the energy audit, where I was doing things that got paid really well for it. People would always tell me I'm really good at this stuff, but it was killing me, man. It was like 80% of my work was stuff that just dragged me down. It wasn't creative. It wasn't like this kind of stuff here gives me energy. And so I was tricked into thinking that that's the stuff I should be doing more of. So I did more of it. And I did so much more of it that I resented my business. And I eventually left the business, sold it for pennies on the dollar to my business partner. Glad. I love the guy. We're meeting up in Napa next week. I love the guy. Nice. I didn't love the business or the role that I had created for myself in that business. And so that's where the energy audit oftentimes comes in that people don't expect. They expect for us to say, focus on what makes you money. That's part of it. You need to focus on what gives you joy as well. So you continue to want to grow your business in a big way. So that's a big part of it.
I think the energy audit kind of gave me a new perspective too, Trevor, because like when you and I went through school, we went through school in different places, but we were both taught like a job is something that you show up for and you try to find the job you're going to hate the least. And so the energy that I was putting in, it was like, well, I really hate these things and I only kind of hate these things. And so I was looking for, how can I spend my time in the least exhausting way? Mm. But what the energy audit taught me was that there are actually some things that I do that give me energy.
Yep.
And when I started really thinking about it, I started asking myself, well, the only thing that I'm doing that's giving me energy is writing. Hmm. But how could that be my full-time job?
Yep.
Now it is.
Dude, that's a great segue. Let's segue over to founder, farmer, tinker, thief, four phases of entrepreneur journey. So that's so cool, man. I didn't realize that was one of the things that gave you energy. So you've written three or four books now. It's your latest one. So let's unpack what this is. Number one, how did you come to this, the four phases, and what are those four phases? Just kind of walk through the four phases for me.
Yeah. So entrepreneurship is cool now, right? People see guys like you and they're like, wow, I want to be like Trevor. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're exposed to successful entrepreneurs everywhere now. And that's amazing. That's what we need. We're going to save the economy. We're going to save the planet through entrepreneurship. I fully believe that. The problem is, you know, the flip side of that is there's so much information out there that it's overwhelming and it's paralyzing.
Yep.
And unfortunately, you know, you heard that advice, which would have been good for a founder. Mm-hmm. But at your stage in the game, it was like, this is really burning me out and it's going to kill my company and my soul unless I sell.
Yep.
So when we started doing a really high volume of calls with people needing help, they would come on the call and they weren't looking for ideas. Mm. Now, 2012, people wanted ideas. What do I do? Mm. But now they were saying, I'm doing all these things. I'm working a 16-hour day and my business isn't moving forward. And so we started filtering the information or the advice that we gave them. And instead of giving them 10 ideas on the call, we would say, just do this one thing. And so, you know, we started thinking about who fits into what phase, and the founders were easy. Mm-hmm. You know, that named itself. It's like your brand new startup. Yeah, we could give you a checklist and you're going to have a successful gym. But really my next book was supposed to be called Farmer. And it was really about like the seeds have been planted and now it's time to cultivate and water and feed the crops and then harvest. And when I started writing it, I realized that's not the phase that I'm in anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm really in this next phase. And so we started thinking about how our cultures evolved from hunter scavenger to, you know, cultivating a garden to specialization. And that's really what the tinker phase is all about. Mm. And then the thief phase was about my personal hero, Robin Hood, who, you know, quote unquote, stole from the rich and gave to the poor. And in the book, I don't want to advocate theft. Yep. What I do want to advocate is creating a multi-generational legacy of wealth that continues after you're gone. Mm. And so the way that we describe the four phases in one sentence is in the founder phase, you're launching your business. In the farmer phase, you're building your business. In the tinker phase, you're building your wealth. And in the thief phase, you're building your legacy.
Dude, so the thief one is kind of the one that threw me off a little bit when I read it. And I'm sure it does for a good amount of people. And that's one of the beauties of that title, because it really goes, am I being a thief of what? And you talk about legacy and the thief side of things. So where did you, why did you choose the word thief? What's the significance of it? And when someone's in that phase, what are they exhibiting that you guys have found?
Well, it is a provocative title on purpose. But the imagery that we use is always around Robin Hood. And so instead of thinking about impoverishing somebody for your own end, mm-hmm. you have to think about moving resources from area of high concentration to areas of low concentration. Okay. So stealing from the resource rich to give to the resource poor.
Gotcha.
So some good examples of that right now are like Bill Gates doing the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, you know, and we're starting to write more and more about more famous examples of the thief phase so that people understand it. In my phase, what that means is, number one, we have a wealth platform for my family. I want to make sure that doesn't die with me. I want to make sure that my kids are set up to be wealthy. But also, I want my community to grow in wealth. And so, you know, we have a workshop in Sault Ste. Marie where we teach entrepreneurship, because we're an industrial steel town in a depression. Mm-hmm. When the heavy industry left, everybody went broke. So we want to do that. And my third legacy is I want kids to be playing sports. And so my wife and I have a fund that pays for kids to play sports. And so my task to get into the thief phase is to make sure that those things continue after I'm gone.
Dude, and that's so important. I know I was at an event, and this is probably 8 years ago now. And there was a guy up on stage, and I don't really go to much events. It's probably like one of three or four events I've ever been to that's like a legit big event, you know. And guy was up on stage, and he was drawing out this kind of curve, and he was kind of charting out his own version of an entrepreneur's path. And it's like you started out, it's all exciting because everything's new. And then you have some success that goes up here, and you think you're kind of on top of the world. Like, hey, like I have this success that I was aiming for, but then you start to kind of in his mind, and I've experienced this as well. You start to kind of like level off a little bit because you lose that zest, you lose the excitement for that, because the startup phase is inherently exciting, but then you move to a maintenance phase, and also the money isn't motivating you as much anymore, because at that phase, if you're in a really financially your rich company, you're like, oh, well, the money part isn't motivating me now. Then you eventually lose your sense of being. You almost like lose your sense of purpose in your business. And so many entrepreneurs catch, you know, they fall in that phase. They're like, oh man, you know, I thought I would be validated finally internally and externally when I reach this income level. And it happened for like a moment, but now it just feels like I'm just there. And I feel like I don't have much purpose in what I do. And then they end up finding their purpose and it climbs back up, which kind of goes into the thief side of it. I think that's such a critical phase that a lot of people miss, man. I'm glad you added it in here, because a lot of people, a lot of business books, a lot of entrepreneur journey things that I've seen, they don't include that last part. They don't include the part of, rather than running away from something, usually when you're starting a business, you're usually running away from a low paying job, your career you don't like, back against the wall financially, whatever. You're running away from something. That's your motivation. They forget to switch and run towards something once it has success. And this is a big deal here.
That's really insightful. Yeah. We do see that quite a bit. And you know, when we started working with gyms in the fitness industry, especially in CrossFit, it was, you would actually get like attacked if you used the word wealthy or profit even. And a lot of people, you know, they just felt so good about the job that they were doing that they felt that it should be this altruistic business where they didn't make any money.
Yep.
And, you know, that lasts for about 2 years. And then you start to realize like, whoa, I'm not buying the groceries that I should be. Mm-hmm. And you go from self-employed to how do I turn this into a business now? And but ultimately you are going to get to this point where things are okay, you know, and I can just show up the rest of my life and do this. And if you don't have a target to run toward, you're just going to give up and burn out.
Dude, I've got page 10 of the book pulled up right here. And I love this paragraph, and I'm going to kind of unpack the back end of the paragraph a little bit. So basically it says, too often I've watched gloriously talented and incredibly passionate people burn themselves out or struggle to turn a profit. In other cases, businesses grow but stall, kind of like was mentioned before, leaving the owners confused and frustrated. And some people simply don't know what to do with success and aren't prepared to seize the day when it arrives. It doesn't have to be that way. A path exists from a passionate business founder to a farmer who grows a profitable business that provides opportunities for others and better serve clients. A good farmer becomes a tinker. So I'm walking through at a high level the transitions here, and I want to unpack these transitions. A good farmer becomes a tinker whose success has freed him or her to take assertive steps that move in an enterprise from small to medium, which is such a hard shift for a lot of people to make. Such a hard shift. I want to talk about making that shift here in a second, but finish this paragraph. It said, beyond those roles is that of the thief, a successful visionary owner who essentially retires to focus on leveraging connections to reach other industries and build a legacy, something that improves the world and lives beyond the owner. This path creates a perfect day for an owner who's worked hard but smart to earn success and freedom. Dude, like those words right there for me encapsulates this, the book at a really high level as far as like getting people excited about the journey of why they're going, why they want to advance through these steps. Man, I read this. I'm like, geez, that's really good. If people could only read that really early on, like they need to read that and then get through, because it's going to excite them to read the rest. So transitioning to phases, right. What do you feel are some of the tripping up points that people have And we'll start with the first phase. What are the tripping up points people have from shifting from a founder to a farmer?
The first is just development of bad habits. You know, you get really good at the wrong things. So I got really good at working a lot. And so I'd get up at 4 a.m. I'd get home at 10 at night and I'd be working the whole time. And I'd be really proud of that. You know, like I would get to my gym before any of the other gyms were open and I could see them out my front window. I would look down on the street and say, suckers, my light's on and yours is not. Right. And I thought that was winning.
Yeah.
So you actually get good at starving yourself. You develop this like profit disorder where you're really proud that like, I haven't paid myself this first year. Right. And you develop this pride in martyrdom. Mm-hmm. And of course, from the outside looking in, like this sounds crazy, but every disorder looks that way.
Yeah.
And then in farmer phase, the challenge is really, one of the challenges is ego-based. You know, nobody can make the donuts as well as I can. So if I hire somebody, I'm going to hire the best donut maker in town and I'm going to look over their shoulder and tell them what they're doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And what you actually have to do is like get yourself out of your head and put yourself on paper. And that was a pivotal moment for me. You do, of course, have to get good at marketing and sales, but the hardest part is really going from the practitioner or the service delivery person to an actual business owner. And they're completely different skill sets. And that's the skill set you have to develop in farmer.
So with that, before you move on to the next one, you said you need to get out of your head and get on paper. What do you mean there? Just so people can kind of make that connection. I believe I know what you mean, but what do you mean there?
You have to make yourself replaceable. Mm-hmm. So we call it the hit by the bus test. You know, if you can't take 3 days off because your business will fall apart, then you don't have a business. Yep. You know, you've got yourself a job. And when you start employing people, it becomes your responsibility to make the business bulletproof. Mm. So when we're working with entrepreneurs in the farmer phase, we break down all of the roles in their company. We break down all the tasks in their company. We write operational manuals, and then we force them to take a 4-day vacation without contact with their business.
Yep.
Because we want to see where the holes are. We want to see what we missed. And every single time what happens is that while they're on the vacation, the entrepreneur has this epiphany. You know, it's like we painted them white and dropped them in the middle of the jungle and they're now on their spirit quest. And the epiphany that they have is like, whoa, I got some big ideas here that I didn't see until I got some distance from this company.
Yep.
And at that point they start transitioning into the tinker phase. But that's what I mean about getting yourself onto paper is you've got to replace yourself.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's so funny. I was thinking back through the journey with Carrot anyway. And it's very similar to this. You know, I was working a lot of hours. It didn't feel like a lot of hours though, cause I was enjoying it. Like I really did enjoy it. Yeah. And here's something that was interesting, Chris. I've maybe talked about this once or twice. And I really didn't start talking about it until last year. It's not because I was trying to avoid it. It's like, I don't know. It didn't seem like a significant part of my journey until I was really looking back and connecting the dots recently. And, right there, out of the founder phase, I was writing all the blog posts. I like writing. I don't like writing long format stuff. And I'm usually like delivering everything last minute. That's why I like doing audios and videos. I get to show up and just do it way faster at it. But I was writing all the blog posts, working with tons of customers, doing a lot of customer support, working on product as well, doing the marketing. You know, I was essentially doing a lot of the stuff in the business. And so I'd stay up really, really late. And I was thinking, well, as long as I put my computer away around dinner time and then have that 2-3 hours with family, I'll pull it back out at 10 o'clock and I'll work until 1-3 in the morning. And as long as I do that, it's not hurting the family. And what happened for me was we were driving out of town back to where I grew up. My wife grew up. That's where my parents are and her parents are. And it's about a 3-hour drive. And I've driven the drive a million times. It's in the middle of the day, you know, 2-3 in the afternoon. And I was driving and I wasn't fully rested, but I didn't feel like I was sleepy. I didn't feel like I was going to fall asleep. And before you know it, man, I was driving down 65 miles an hour in the mountains, no guardrail. And one second I was awake, the next second I wasn't. I fell asleep.
Wow.
3 kids in the back, or might have been 2 at that point, but at least 2 of my kids were in the back. My wife was reading. She was looking down, so she didn't see it. And luckily, it's like one of those movie things, you know, where you think, oh, there's no way that would have happened in real life. That it would have been that close that they would have like literally saw it, swerved away, bumper scrapes the guardrail by a ravine. There's no way. And that's exactly what happened. I woke up just enough time going 65 miles an hour to see the guardrail go like this. It scraped it. It's still on our bumper today. I haven't got it fixed. I pull over, get out. Didn't even say a word, just swapped it. I'm like, whoa. I was feet away from killing my whole family because I was so prideful, thinking that it was cool to be working all these hours, jamming on all this stuff. And so that was my forcing point. And I went cold turkey after that. Like immediately I went cold turkey. I'm like, I'm not working nights, not working weekends anymore. And I didn't for 2 years. For 2 years, didn't bring my computer. And that forced me to hire people then.
That's crazy.
And then after that, I go into the farmer phase. And I guess I'm in the farmer phase and wanting to move towards tinker phase is what it would be. And started to put together processes and stuff. And I kind of took your four-day thing to an extreme. I should have started with 4 days. But I told my team, it was about in December or January, and I said, guys, I'm going to take a month off in July. And what do you guys think about that? And the team was probably 10 or 12 people at that time. And what it did was by giving a lot of time, number one, we had a lot of time to prep. And I asked a couple questions. Basically, it was the whole what happens if I'm gone, what balls will drop when I'm gone. I wrote down my list. Every team member wrote down their list. And then for the next 6 months, we just worked through getting things out of my head and getting them on paper, like you said. And that month was amazing. The team, I never checked in with them. They never hit me up for anything. We had the biggest month that we'd ever had.
Wow.
And there were some decisions that were made that maybe weren't exactly like I would, but it completely changed the paradigm. It completely changed my mindset to go, So I've been in the business so much and I didn't need to be. I need to trust the team more and continue to focus on getting things out of my head on paper. And that hasn't stopped since. So I just want to illustrate that because that's me walking through your phases, going from founder and working a ton and having pride for it, and then going into farmer and in that phase almost having a life-altering crash that made me go cold turkey and start to get things out of my head. And then that led me into Tinker now, which I'm kind of like, I'm between Tinker and Thief. Somewhere around there, there's some sort of transition that'll be happening, yeah. You know? That's cool.
Same. You know, I'm kind of thankful that did happen because one of the stickiest stories that entrepreneurs tell themselves is that, yeah, I'm struggling, but my family will see my sacrifice and respect me for it. And that is not true.
Yeah.
All they see is dad's not here, you know, or mom's not home at bedtime. And so like that, luckily I didn't have a traumatic or near traumatic event like you did, but it just became very obvious to me that I was wrong.
Yep.
And, So
I love it. So, and I didn't want to derail that. So now transition from kind of where we are right now. And I guess in hindsight, we'll be able to look back over the coming years and go, oh, here's exactly how I went from tinker to thief. But how does someone navigate through that? What are some of the struggles that someone will have in going from tinker to thief?
Well, so when they're going from farmer to founder, they really go from like building their business to building themselves as an entrepreneur, you know, and I won the lottery again. I had this really serendipitous meeting with Dan Martell and started working in the JFDI group and realized like what could hold my business back at this point is really my lack of leadership skills, you know. Just as I started as a fitness coach and realized that I didn't know how to be a business owner, I then realized as I entered the tinker phase that I didn't know how to be a leader. And, you know, so I spent about 3 years working through that and I'm still working on it. You know, I have specific mentorship for that. But as you enter the tinker phase, the interesting part is like, you have to go from being a leader to being a community-minded leader. You can't just you're not just trying to serve the people who work for you and have to say you're doing a good job anymore. And in fact, I had this kind of epiphany. We were trying to help some kids play hockey last year, and we had paid for their equipment and their ice time, and we'd bought them t-shirts, you know. Yeah. And one of the parents was not grateful for it, and they complained a lot about it. And one of my in a building that I own, there's a cafe, and the cafe is run by a lady named Mary. And she said, "Chris, never forget that some of the people we choose to serve are assholes." And that's the shift that you have to make, is like, I'm not just serving the people who work for me. I'm not just serving my customers anymore. I'm actually serving people who don't care about my feelings.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
So that's a big one. The other thing too, is like, you have to achieve a level of confidence and financial knowledge that I never had to before. You know, and make sure that your assets and wealth are in vehicles that will provide this multi-generational vehicle.
Dude, that's a big one, man. That, we could do a whole podcast on that right there, because because a lot of entrepreneurs, once they get through that farmer phase and tinker phase, they're good at making money. But I know so many who are not good at keeping it. And they're on this roller coaster ride where they made hundreds of thousands or millions, and then you see them like drop again, but then they made it again, then they drop again, and they've got this amazing skill set for going through founder, farmer into tinker, but then they implode at that point because they don't have those skill sets that you had mentioned. How do you keep the money? How do you grow it? How do you make sure that all that work that you're putting in, where the money goes out there and works for you? And that's something I'm kind of I'm working on. I wouldn't say I'm amazing. I'm good at keeping money. I'm not amazingly great at making my money grow for me. And that's one of the things I'm working on right now, is how do I take this money and better invest it to go, you know, like Mr. Wonderful would say in Shark Tank, send out the troops and have them come back with more. That's as soon as I find out exactly how to do that even better than I'm currently am, I'll report back to you, man. But I'm finding some
that's
things
great. Working. Thank you. Yeah, I'm in that stage too. So I would really benefit from learning what you learn. And so, you know, you and I are at a stage now where the family is doing amazing. We're able to give our kids and spouses like these amazing things. And we're trying to figure out how do we make that continue without our constant presence.
Yeah.
So it's in a little bit of a way, it's a way like going from founder to farmer again. But this time you're doing it with your personal legacy and assets instead of your business.
And it's fun, man. Like it's fun, yeah. You know, and that's something I've been thinking a lot about, is that next phase. Is even Brady here in my office, my amazing audio video guy, we were talking about it about a month ago, and we talked about it in our community group at church last night again, that Brady's like, man, I walked in here, you know, I first started working here, I was wondering why you were in the office every day. Cause in his perspective, the owner of a company the size of ours, you just think would just not be in the office every day. Right. And I really like what I do, but I still have some of those lingering things from the farmer phase that are still kind of in some of my mindset that I feel like I need to get out of it. And so I'm building an office at my house now so I can do focus work there. And then come in,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and come into the office here to be really interactive with the team and really make it a spot where focus work happens out there at the house overlooking the river on my time. And I come in here to just really interact a lot instead of kind of being in here in my office and Brady and I are holed away with the door shut, shooting content all day and me just doing my stuff. And so I've got some crusts I got to get out of there for sure. And how I fully step into the latter end of tinker and start to step more into thief. So it's going to be a fun transition for sure.
Yeah. One of the things that was, well, the hardest for me to learn, and Mike Michalowicz talked about it in Clockwork, is like your role as the CEO is really to think, to get into flow state, have that focus time. And you're probably not going to do that at the office. So the hang up that you've got to get over is, if I'm not at the office, I'm not working.
Yep.
Right. So for me, I actually had to get out of my gym and start cycling again. And, you know, part of my job now is to cycle for about 2 hours every day.
And there's some guilt that I know I have sometimes I'm the same thing. I'm starting to get to a point where I'm not having it as much, but kind of relating back to the phases in the, I think for me, it was transitioning from farmer to tinker. And then in that tinker phase where there would be a little bit of guilt on both sides. Well, shoot, I'm not going to go golf at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoons because everyone else is sitting here working. I want to be a good example and like make sure that they know that I'm working hard for them, you know, and there's some, there's some logic to that. I want to make sure, but I think my mindset there was flawed because it shouldn't be in the labor that I'm doing for them. It should be the way that I'm serving them, giving them the resources, the vision, the coaching that they need to succeed. And also me stepping back, that's something I didn't realize early on, and is they need me to step back and get out so they can go out there and thrive instead of having me here at arm's length for a question. It's like, well, what if I'm not here? You're going to take it and own it. And so that's something that I'm challenging myself on a lot more. I'm going to be carving out more block time. That's stuff like that, that gets me out of my element, that I don't work a lot of hours. It's just, I need to adjust some of that, the hours that I do work in here for sure.
Well, it helped me to have a lot of our senior staff read Clockwork and understand what McAllowitz calls the queen bee role, which is like, you know, what is Chris's greatest value to the company?
Yep.
Like what does Chris do that ultimately results in us all making more money? Mm-hmm. And my marketing guy said, that's easy. You sit there and write. Like I would lock you in your basement and have you write all day if we could. So for me to be able to sit still for 2 hours and write, I need to be physically tired. Like I need to exercise. That's just how my brain works. Yep. And so part of my job is to train, you know, on the bike now and then come back and get in flow state for 2 or 3 hours and write. And that's the best thing I can do to help anybody.
Dude. So I love it, man. So what I want to do is this is because I'm scrolling through the book even more. I want people to go pick up the book because I'm in the, I think it's the farmer phase right now, that chapter I'm on. I think it's that one where you dive into details, man. Like you're diving in, hey, here is how you go out there and figure and get the stuff out of your brain on the paper, you know, finally monitor, track and evaluate. And then you start to dive into how you do that. And it's a very strategic, high level strategic book, but then it dives into tactics that you can also deploy to wade through those different phases. Dude, so where can people get this book? Where can people get Founder Farmer, Tinker, and Thief?
Amazon is the best.
Sweet.
Definitely. Yeah. It's in some Barnes & Noble bookstores too, but there just aren't as many of those anymore.
There's not, man. Dude, we don't have a bookstore in town. We're in a small town. We don't have like a legit bookstore in town other than a used bookstore. And so it's all Amazon here. All Amazon.
Wow.
Awesome, guys. Guys, go find the book, please. Founder Farmer, Tinker Thief from Chris Cooper. And you guys will thank me later for it. And then the other book that he had mentioned there was from Mike McAllowitz. Mike's been on the CarrotCast twice, but I have not talked with him about Clockwork yet. So Clockwork is a book I haven't read of his, and I'm going to dig into that one, man. I honestly hadn't even heard of it. I'd kind of been in my own little bubble digging in on a bunch of leadership stuff lately, and that one didn't trickle up on me. So Clockwork's going to be one that I'm going to grab next after that. But dude, any kind of parting thoughts, whether it's concepts in the book or outside of the book, that you want to pass along to the thousands of entrepreneurs who are going to end up listening to this over the coming months?
I think the best thing that you can do right now is just, you know, get yourself a lens through which you view and consume information. And so we try to do that. We have a test on our site, twobrain.com/test. And that'll tell you which phase you're in and what advice applies to you right now. You know, some of the Vaynerchuk advice is great when you're in the founder phase, and some is great in the tinker phase. And what we try to do is just equip you with that filter so that you know, what should I be doing now? And then combat overwhelm and hopefully get you to wealth a lot quicker than I did.
Dude, I love it. So I'm on your site right now. And you got twobrainbusiness.com. Is that where the test is, or did you mention a different URL?
There's a test on either site, but for most entrepreneurs, it's twobrain.com/test.
Sweet.
Cool. Yeah, twobrainbusiness.com is very specific to the gym industry. Mm-hmm. Twobrain.com is how do you apply these to any service industry?
I got you. Cool. I pulled it up, guys. So guys, twobrain.com/test. twobrain.com/test. You're going to see an amazing graphic, founder, farmer, tinker, thief. And then down there, take the big old yellow button, take the test. So I'm going to take it right after this, and I'll shoot you an email, Chris, and kind of, I'm just kind of curious. I love tests like this. So I'm going to take the test, but I want everyone to go through there and take it. If you're curious where you are in that phase, take the darn test and then go read the book, because I can tell you guys, it's such a different business on the backside of it. So many entrepreneurs get stuck in the farmer phase. So many entrepreneurs get stuck in the farmer phase. And that's the point where people do get burnt out. It's the point where people start to resent their business. It's the point where people feel like, man, it feels like I'm almost there, but I can't get there. It's making the transition from farmer to tinker. And his book walks you through how to do that. And that could be some of the best investment of the book, but also the time that you guys can make this year, making that transition, stepping out of the business a little bit and really moving towards something that's more impactful. So Chris, man, I appreciate the heck out of you coming on here and breaking this apart. And also just really appreciate and thankful that we had a chance to have our paths cross. Hopefully we can get together in person again sometime soon. And I'm just pumped for what you're doing. I mean, the work that you're doing for gym owners, but also for other entrepreneurs, is kind of similar to what we're doing. Is we have a lot of content for investors, but I'm like, I just want to help entrepreneurs. If they're an investor or an agent, amazing. But if they're an entrepreneur, awesome. You know, that's what I want to help. So you're kind of the fitness version of that, and melding our philosophies, man, I think is pretty powerful. So thank you and congrats on the book.
Thanks again, Trevor. Awesome to catch up with you.
Hey, likewise. Guys, go to twobrain.com/test. Take the test. Go grab the book. Report back to us. And also, last thing, go to iTunes. I guess it's not called iTunes anymore. Go to Apple Podcasts. And leave a rating and review. Leave a rating and review over there. That's what fuels the growth of this podcast. This podcast has more than doubled in listenership over the past 12 to 14 months. And it's because you guys are sharing these episodes up with people. You're sharing them up with people in and out of real estate, because it's making an impact on you. And you're making comments, ratings, and reviews, which boosts up the charts there. So guys, so appreciate you listen to this. Go grab those resources from Chris, and we will talk soon. Thank you very much.